This is another session in our series on the divine laws of life. Tonight we're working with the law of exchange, which has nothing to do with taking Christmas gifts back to Macy's. Our question for the night is, what is the divine law of exchange, and how can aspirants best harness it? I've shuffled the cards and laid them out and have the spread that you see on your screen. The starting point is the Two of Swords upside down. The counterpoint is Temperance upside down. Temperance is the 14th card in the Major Arcana, or a 5. The challenge is the Ten of Swords right side up. The purpose is the Four of Rods right side up. The endowment is the Ace of Swords upside down. The Ace is a 1, which similar to the 1 that is the Ten of Swords. The destiny is the Chariot upside down, number 7 in the Major Arcana. The real question in the Pillar of Revelation is the Queen of Cups right side up. The hidden forces, hidden factors, the 6 of Cups, right side up. The spiritual ideal is the 6 of Swords upside down, so we have 2 sixes in a row. And the culmination is the 2 of Pentacles right side up. So we have 5 upright and 5 reversed. We have 2 majors, being Temperance and the Chariot. We have 4 swords, 1 rod, 2 cups, and 1 pentacle. So I think we can conclude that this is of some importance in the spiritual life, to the life of spirit, since there are 4 swords dominating. The other interesting thing is to notice that we have the Temperance, Chariot, and the 6 of Rods all deal with combustion, or the creation of energy, the generation of energy. So that will be exciting when we get there. All right, I want to start with the starting point, the Two of Swords. I want those of you who can see the screen, or those of you who have pulled out the Two of Swords in your own deck, tell me what is striking about the Two of Swords upside down.
All that ancient evil.
Well, yeah, but we've seen that before. Ho hum. That's not the answer I'm looking for.
The antenna toward heaven?
Well, what is that antenna toward heaven?
Well, it's the two crossed swords, but it's like a conductor that's conducting the energy down into the...
Betty, we just lost you. Betty?
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, you got cut off. Am I there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, good.
Yes?
All right, so first of all, they're not antenna to heaven since it's upside down. Looks more like the great picture on the cover of Love Virtue, by the painting by William Blake, of God, the great geometer, with the compass coming down. However, be that as it may, I'm still looking for the right answer. What stands out above all else on the Two of Swords upside down?
How about that pillar right in, well, of course that's ancient evil, but is that a sign for God imminent with that V like that?
Well, you tell me.
Well, that's how I took it when I looked at it, but...
All right, I'm going to put you all out of your misery here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put everybody out of their misery here. What I'm referring to is the fact that although the V shape goes off the bottom of the card, it forms a triangle.
Oh, it does.
It does indeed. It would be an inverted triangle if the card was right side up, but it's a simple equilateral triangle indicating the completion of or the equilibrium between the pairs of opposites. So the first thing we can conclude, well, before we go any further, notice that in the counterpoint, Temperance, she's got all those little nesting triangles in her throat. There's square in the Four of Rods, that represents a square, a circle in the Chariot. The Two of Pentacles has the infinity sign or a Möbius strip. So we have all kinds of wonderful geometrical designs here. And we have a triangle, a circle, a square. So there's some pretty primordial forces going at play here, especially in this combination. Now, getting back to the Two of Swords, we have this triangle. And so the dominant idea here is that exchange is how you deal with the pairs of opposites in the physical plane. We know we're talking about the pairs of opposites because look at the Two of Pentacles, that's the culmination. And if that isn't the pair of opposites, I don't know what is. But also in the Chariot, which is in the destiny spot, you've got the comic face and the tragic face, the pairs of opposites. You have all different kinds of conflict and throughout the spread. You have the two flowers over in the Ace of Swords. We're definitely talking about the pairs of opposites here. The law of exchange is the divine law that governs the creation of the apex that harmonizes the pairs of opposites. This is fundamental to all esoteric growth and whatnot. So fundamental, I want to read you a brief excerpt from Letters on Occult Meditation, Alice Bailey's book. This would be page 204. He starts the section out by saying, "There's no question that those who break the law perish by the law, whilst those who keep it live by it. The true study of occultism is the study of why and how of phenomena. It is the finding out of the method whereby results are achieved, and it involves close analysis of events and circumstances in order to discover their governing laws." Well, that's what we're trying to do in this series, and specifically in this particular one. And then he goes on and says, "Take, for instance, the law of substance. This law puts the disciple in the position of wisely utilizing the universal storehouse. It is the manipulation of matter, its adaptation to the interacting forces of supply and demand," the opposite extremes. "A blind faith is all right for the mystic. It's one of the means by which the divine storehouse can be entered. But to understand the method whereby that storehouse is kept replenished, and to comprehend the means whereby the bounteous supply of all the Father is brought in contact with the children's need is better still. One of those maxims I can here give about supply and demand." And then he puts it in italics, so it's really important. "It is only as a skillful use is made of the supply for the needs of the worker and the work that that supply continues to pour in. The secret is use, demand, take. Only as the door is unlocked by the law of demand is another and higher door unlocked, permitting supply. The law of gravitation holds hid the secret. Think this out." So that's kind of underlying what we're talking about here. This, if you think of this triangle, reaching up into heaven, of course, where providence is, these two antennae become the means by which we can reach out and tap the storehouse of providence. So we have give at one end and take at the other. Now, through long eons, most people specialize in take. They don't give a whole lot of attention to give. But, you see, anytime you take, there has to be an exchange. You have to give something for that taking. This principle, of course, makes it extremely clear for anybody who bothers to spend 5 minutes thinking about it, that cheating is self-correcting. You cannot cheat, because the moment you cheat, you will be cheated. It's inevitable. It's inexorable. You have cast the die, so to speak. Now, this is not just in terms of using money and buying and selling goods and whatnot. It's in terms of relationships. It's in terms of responsibilities. If you say you're going to do something and then you find it convenient or expedient not to do it, you've cheated. In essence, you've created a law. And it's not that the laws of life are offended by this. They know perfectly well that people do this. But it's we do it only out of ignorance. Out of ignorance because the result of that cheating is as inexorable as if you hold your hand in a burning fire. It doesn't matter whether you are a blessed child of God or not. You're still going to sear your skin. You're going to end up with a charred hand. You're going to need a glove or an artificial limb from then on. That's just the way it is. This is as inexorable. The law of exchange is very clear on this. If you try to defraud anybody or any group or any or life itself in any way, shape, or form, you will in turn, you're creating your own self-correcting fraud. That's balance. The universe is designed to do that. The law of exchange guarantees it. But this triangle is far more important than that mere eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of truth. The triangle here suggests that since this card is the naked woman with the blindfold standing behind the images of ancient evil, the naked woman represents truth, divine truth. The blindfold indicates that we can only get that truth by the intuition. And this is the intersection of truth and ancient evil. Now, one of the things that this card is saying, and please listen carefully, don't hear it the way you want to hear it. Listen to what I say. I think we all know from direct painful experience that ancient evil is worthless. It is the illusion or the maya of physical substance that we accord it wealth or stature, status, value. But envy and negativity and depression, these are worthless. I wouldn't give you one penny for any of it. I'd give you quite a bit of money to haul it away and dispose of it, but I wouldn't ever buy it for all the tea in China or wherever the tea comes from. So we have here a dynamic statement that under the law of exchange, we're working here on Earth in the midst of ancient evil, the residue of ancient evil, but we have to view it as worthless. Has no intrinsic worth at all until we start giving it worth. Now, that isn't by going along with the illusion of Maya. It's by recognizing that the only thing that can enrich this ancient evil is spirit. Spirit contains all the value, all the worthiness of life. The residue of ancient evil is just pure debris. It can be very convincing debris if you buy into the notion that materialism has any value, but it is spirit that gives it value. It is our perception that gives it value. So as we learn to give it value, meaning the value of spiritual virtue, and we transform depression into joy or substance into light, whatever it might be, anxiety into peace, then we're investing the treasures of heaven in redeeming the substance of earth. That's part of the law of exchange. This is what the Tibetan is talking about when he says, give, take, give, demand, and take. The triangle here is give at one end, take at the other end, and value or worth at the apex. But it's always spiritual worth at the apex. that makes give and take of the supply and demand of the physical plane worthwhile. So we have this idea here with the triangle that we use the law of exchange to establish an equilibrium between the dualities of life on Earth. And if you can do that, then you're able to tap the innate power of that substance. The innate power, of course, exists in the level of spirit. But we can bring it down as an agent and incorporate that. Now, so equilibrium is the ideal of exchange, that every aspect of give and take in our life, financial, educational, relationships, whatever it might be, charity, whatever it might be, every exchange that we have is meant to achieve equilibrium. We need to make sure that our dealings are honest so that they're not thrown out of balance. That's difficult because we're dealing constantly with the residue of ancient evil. And the residue of ancient evil is highly seductive. It holds us down to earth like the law of gravity, as D.K. suggested there. So we are constantly in a position, in the position of the blindfolded woman here, of making sure that we don't get overrun or overwhelmed by the residue of ancient evil, that we maintain the posture of enriching life on earth with the qualities and virtues of spirit. Now, conflict results from imbalances in the law of exchange. We'll talk more about that when we get to the chariot. But all the conflicts in your life are basically indications that you have taken more than you have given. And the seesaw is vacillating frenetically. So that's the theory behind this. And then we go on to the counterpoint in temperance. And this emphasizes it even more because temperance is this angelic force that purifies energy as it comes into the earth plane. And so the law of exchange is this tremendous, notice the honeycomb in the center here of her body and compare that to the pattern in the center of the chariot. We're talking about the generation of energy here. And there's an infinite supply of energy, support, nutrition, providence in the divine levels of life. As an agent, we have to learn how to use the law of exchange to create the inflow of abundance, of support. As I was reading that passage from the Tibetan, it reminded me of the new discoveries in many oil fields, where oil fields that were abandoned because they were dry wells are now, they're going back and discovering that they filled back up with oil again, meaning that beneath the surface of the earth, a good ways down, there's this incredible reservoir of oil that seeks to make its way to the surface. And if we draw energy if we draw oil out of an oil field and let it lie fallow for 50 years, we might find that we go back and there's more oil again. It's a replenishing source. That's a wonderful symbol for what indeed happens with the life of spirit. We bring in ideas, we bring in support, we bring in whatever we need. We can use the law of exchange to bring this in. But we have to do it with the idea of the transference of energy. Keep in mind that one of the basic principles of physics is the law of conservation of matter and energy, that if you burn fuel, it turns into energy, but it's never lost. It may be lost as oil or wood, but it's transferred into energy, and then that energy recycles itself and so on. So the point here is that none of these things appear magically. They come from spirit, and we're meant to access the spirit and to bring it down into the earth plane, but we must do it in a balanced way. We must recognize the principle of exchange here, that we put it to work in meaningful ways that will draw further support from the inner planes. And so our great work as humanity is, of course, to transform ancient evil and to redeem it and to bring spirit into it. And that's all summarized right here. There's all different kinds of exchanges that can occur. And one of the things that we have to understand is that we are in the habit, being human beings, we give it a sense of value. And so, for example, we might go to the gas station and fill our car with gasoline and pay $3 or $3.25 for a gallon of gas. That's an exchange of physical money for physical energy. But we might also want to bring an aspect of the astral into the physical. And so we might order a popular song from iTunes and pay 99 cents for the privilege to listen to this song, which cheers us up emotionally or something, or gives us emotional goose. And so that's a transfer from the astral plane to the physical plane. Or we could go to Light's website and order a book for $20 and transfer mental energy to the physical plane, the mental energy of a book. Or we could bring spiritual energy down to the physical plane by creating opportunity. I think I have a seminar on that. Well, imagine that. What a coincidence. And then, or we could transfer the spiritual to the mental level. This is where we cultivate the pearl of great price of spirit and bring it down into our mind and use it to order our mind. So these are transfers of energy from higher levels to lower or same level, but they're all governed by the law of exchange. Okay, I'm going to unmute here and see if there's any comments or questions before I move on. Any comments or questions so far? Anybody?
Well, just quickly, if I've got this right, anytime we are working on our ill emotions and raising those to anything divine, then that's all that transmutation of energy and all operating under the law of exchange. Is that correct?
Well, everything we do is operating under the law of exchange. It's just we're not using the law of exchange intelligently unless we're doing what you suggested.
Okay.
If you go into a grocery store and pay a dollar for something and you expect 50 cents change and they give you 60 cents change and you recognize it and you don't correct it, you're violating the law of exchange. You're the one that's being hurt, not the cashier or the store or whatever. And it's a trivial example, but it's a very important example, because if we cut corners, shave ethics, seek an unnatural advantage over anybody in any exchange, then we're violating the law of exchange. We're the one that has to monitor this in our own life. Nobody else will do it for us. Some people will try, if they, you know, you're cheating me. But then we don't know whether they're trying to cheat us. We can investigate it, but in some cases it's not possible to know that.
Where would impulse
what if it's not intentional? It still is going to...
Well,
it's still going to act the same.
If it's unintentional, you will unintentionally get screwed 10 cents in some other exchange, and you won't know
it. That's okay. Got it. That's what I thought. Okay.
Rose.
It's still going to work perfectly.
Yes.
Even though we don't.
Right. Rose.
I was just wondering where impulse buying would fall into the law of exchange.
Impulse buying? Well, it falls in usually in the grocery store.
I mean, I suppose it's immaturity or something, but...
Right. The impulse buying is a result of basically the emotions shanghaiing the process.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, I got to have that. Well, you see... We're talking from a point of maturity, as you mm-hmm. said, it's immaturity. We're talking from a point of maturity where we have come to recognize that the material plane and all of its many goods and whatnot is inherently worthless, except that humanity has organized it and learned to use it for good things. And so if you didn't have any dirty dishes, if you always ate out your meals, you wouldn't need a dishwasher. But if you do eat at home and you have dishes clean, a dishwasher has some value to you. But it has value to you in the sense of releasing you from the drudgery of cleaning dishes. And then you can spend that time meditating and contemplating the pearl of great price. So the point is that a lot of this is a matter of the perspective of the individual. But there's nothing of any inherent value in the physical plane until we give it value. And that, my friends, is the whole point that we're driving at here. And that is that the law of exchange is designed ultimately to govern the way we bring the virtues and insights and qualities of spirit into the earth plane. That's the underlying meaning of the Two of Swords. We'll see this as we go into the next couple of cards. So I'm going to go ahead and keep talking here. We go to the Ten of Swords. That's the creative challenge. Ten of Swords is the guy's laying face down in the desert. He's got 10 swords puncturing his back. Suspiciously where the chakras are. And so these are swords. This is the life of spirit. These are wonderful qualities where he's trying to, because he's dead to the world, he's able to bring the living forces of spirit into the earth plane. And that's what we're talking about here, the exchange of spiritual energy and bringing it in and manifesting it on the physical plane to transform the life of the physical plane. So these are all divine virtues and qualities and principles like joy and wisdom and harmony and beauty and peace and dignity and truth and light and justice. All of these divine forces are ones that we as humans are becoming aware of, and we can learn to transfer these energies through our creativity, through the way we interact with other people, through the quality of work we do. And so, for example, as I talked about in my ATM this morning, most people's attitude towards work is one of drudgery, toil, labor. I got to go to work today. And yet if we bring joy and a sense of beauty into our attitudes towards work and we try to enrich the work we do with joy and beauty, then we're transforming the quality of the work we do. And, of course, we're discovering joy in the process of doing that. But we're not discovering joy in the work. We're putting joy into the work. And we've discovered the law of exchange. We're exchanging the drudgery that troubles everybody else for the joy of a job well done, the joy of achievement. And I could go through every one of these divine qualities, wisdom, harmony, beauty, etc., and show you how human life gives us, through relationships, through all different kinds of challenges, the opportunity to use the law of exchange to bring the unlimited worth and value of a spiritual force into our limited focus of expression on the physical plane. And that is the exchange that is being talked about here. The exchange enables us almost magically to bring something that nobody else can see into reality on the physical plane. And this is the conversion of energy into matter. But this brings up some interesting questions. How do you measure joy? How can you determine if a piece of work done with, let's say, a woman has done some, embroidery, and you go into a shop and you're drawn by all the joy which she poured into that embroidery. Well, you might be able to come up with a price for the embroidery, but what about the joy? How can you measure the value of joy? The practical example of this would be, how do you measure the creative excellence of Dali's Santiago El Grande, the one with the horse and the blue and everything? This is a pearl beyond any price, a pearl of great price. The canvas has a certain value on the market, probably quite large, but the real value of it is almost incalculable. And yet, because he was part of that give and take, he's created something that life will continue to reimburse him for, not in coin of the realm, but in many other ways of rewarding him for the beauty and majesty he's brought into the earth plane in this way. Not just in that one painting, but in all of his paintings. So this is the way human life grows and expands. When somebody, as a child, gets an excellent education, that is often an indication that they've earned that education through their imbalance of giving more than they take in a previous life, through generosity, through charity. There are a lot of different ways that we are rewarded for our surplus of assets. This is usually from life to life, because each life is carefully planned by the soul. And it's at the end of the life, if your asset balance outweighs your liabilities, your debts, then it will probably print out in the future lifetime in terms of being born in a family that can give you an excellent education, or maybe you get a scholarship. Or it could print out in terms of good health and vitality. It could print out in terms of wealth or opportunity. Excellent friendships and support from friends throughout your life, love, protection, maybe even at the spiritual level, initiation. These are some of the common ways in which life rewards the our effort to give more than we take. But again, it's back to this triangle of the Two of Swords, give and take at one end, at each end of the baseline, and then worth and value, which is spiritual, at the apex. So we need to think in those terms. What is the asset? What is the liability? What is the value? And we must start to think in terms of adding value to everything we do. I call this value-added thinking. You may remember that phrase from earlier things that I've taught. I use that phrase in teaching the management seminar. Value-added thinking is kind of like value-added tax, except that it's not painful. So as we think, we try to And as we act, we try to add value to everything we do, to our relationships, to we try to enrich the lives of our children, not take advantage of them. We try to enrich the lives of our friends. We try to create opportunities and share what we have with other people. This is the basic essence of this, and it's the way in which we're bringing heaven to earth in very pragmatic ways. Okay, from the challenge down to the purpose, we have the four of rods, and this is our square, the four poster of celebration, and the castle in the background. That would be the ashram. And these four posts here, these four pillars or rods, anybody want to take a crack at what they represent? Well, all right. I know you're all bashful and shy and actually paying attention to something else entirely. The four rods here represent the four elements. Air, earth, fire, water. And these are the creative elements of the magician. They represent the four suits of the tarot. And the rods represent fire. The swords represent air, spirit. The cups represent water. And the pentacles represent earth. And unless our exchange of these elements and our use of it creatively, of them creatively, is an honest one, it will not create balance. At times, it will put us into debt to life. Debt is what we owe life. Debt, if we look forward to the six of swords over there in the spiritual ideal, debt is what rocks the boat, creates the waves, where we have taken more than we have given, where we have tried to cheat life or get an advantage, where we have viewed our job as something that pays the bills rather than as something that we use to express our creativity and our spirit. So the person who has a good-paying job and goes and sleeps on the job as a regular course of habit is cheating their employer. They end up in debt for having accepted payment without giving an honest return for it. And there's a lot of people who fall into that category and end up in debt to life when they have had the opportunity to enrich it. In fact, Dion Fortune in Practical Occultism and Daily Life suggests that we probably spend the first 200 or 300 lives borrowing heavily against our account. And by doing silly, foolish things from which we slowly learn, but at some point along about life 300 or 400, we start to turn the corner and start to learn it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And it's not nice to try to take advantage of the law of exchange. It can't be done. It's the law. It's a principle. This law is not here to harass us or confuse us. It's here to serve as a guide, as the Tibetan suggested in what I read earlier. So this is the way in which we achieve balance in our life, balance between the spirit and the form. Then we come to the endowment, the Ace of Swords. The Ace of Swords is very straightforward. It's an ace stuck in the ground. There are two white flowers of purity growing up out of it. And, of course, the ground is the residue of ancient evil, although a little bit smaller in dimension than we saw in the Two of Swords. So the sword is stuck in the ground, cultivating. It's like a big hoe, cultivating the ground, tilling it, so that we can then plant. And this reminds us that the law of exchange is an expression of the law of cause and effect. or as the Christian Bible puts it, as you sow, so shall you reap. And so Spirit is coming in and sowing opportunity and wealth and unlimited potential and possibilities for our life. If we're busy growing, planting the virtues of life and toiling to make them come to fruition, all will be well. We're giving more than we're taking. And life is designed to do that. A single plant, you know, tomato or melon or whatever, has the seeds to reproduce hundreds more of its kind, more than enough for us, and to sell some for a fair exchange. And that's the way life is designed to be. But we get so fixated sometimes by the ancient evil, we forget that that is meant to be the wonderful soil in which we plant our spiritual self, not a temptation. So this is the archetypal force of opportunity. This law of exchange is a constant renewal, recycling of opportunity. More than anything else, the seeds of our accomplishments today, when replanted, create new opportunities for the future. Future in this lifetime, also the future in subsequent lifetimes. Now, there's another way of interpreting this card, however. And this is where we get into the nitty-gritty. When the sword is plunged into the substance of the residue of ancient evil, it does stir up a certain measure of ancient evil, or ancient patterns, ancient traditions. And we need that perspective, that intuitive perspective that we find in the Two of Swords. We need that perspective to remember that we are wielding the sword. We are not stabbing ourselves with it. So this is where if we cheat life or we try to get an advantage, unfair advantage, this is where it tends to backfire and we get trapped in the diseases and leftover patterns of the ancient past. And so, yes, the substance of the earth has a lot of imperfection. And if we use our sword to try to get an advantage, we may just bring up something like syphilis or war, or who knows what we might unearth if we approach this unethically. And in fact, if we combine this and then look forward to the Chariot, we can see that when misused, the law of exchange traps us in circumstances beyond our wildest imagination. We become trapped in the prison of the material plane. If we forget Spirit and become a person of materialism, who thinks that the material plane is all there is and getting as much of it as we can for ourselves is the goal, we will get trapped in conflict. We will, at a national level, we'll get trapped in warfare. These are the debts, the debtor prisons that we create. We get trapped in a situation where instead of reaping the rewards of our activities, we are squeezed by financial forces or the opposition of others into very confining circumstances where we're unable to think clearly or see the way out. And then we despair of that. Well, that's the power of the ancient evil taking over and possessing us instead of allowing our spiritual self to be the master of the transaction.
Unintended consequences.
Unintended consequences. Absolutely right. And they're not necessary at all. But in any transaction that we have, we can go from being trapped by those circumstances or liberated by them. It's not the conditions of life that matter. For example, how do you measure an act of quote-unquote charity? Let's say you're giving a gift to a college, $1 million, and you do it with the expectation that they'll name a dorm after you and you'll get all kinds of wonderful PR. Well, is that a gift, or are you purchasing good public relations? From an esoteric point of view, it's a purchase, a rather selfish and self-serving purchase. If you gave the gift anonymously out of the goodness of your heart and set up scholarship funds for needy students, then that's a different story entirely. It's a totally different measurement of the law of exchange. But if your reason for doing this is self-serving, then you've become a prey to the selfishness of materialism. Whereas a gift to a needy person motivated by love and compassion has to be measured entirely differently. Or the act of hiring someone who needs a job. I was telling Rose at dinner that as I was thinking about this subject earlier today, I remembered that my father found out that one of his friends had a very good job as a supervisory job at Buckeye Steel Castings in Columbus, was laid off, lost his job. And so he found a way to hire him and give him a supervisory position at the plant where my father worked, my grandfather's plant. And he didn't do this as an act of charity. He did this as an act of friendship. And sometimes something as simple as that is an act of great giving that sets in motion many benefits. The act of giving a scholarship or paying for the education of some young person, even though you're not responsible for them, is a gift of wisdom, whether they take advantage of it or not. Those people who, in the days of the revolution in this country, sacrificed everything they owned to enable the country to win its war on independence, they died in poverty or relative poverty, and yet the country has grown in great strength. That's the type of attitude or motivation that then the law of exchange rewards with untold opportunity in future laws. Just to bring this down into practical terms, just think how the gift of a copy of Forces of the Zodiac to somebody that has the ability to understand the nature of astrological forces intuitively, how that can transform their lives. It can be a very, very simple act that you never hear back from or the consequences of, but it's done without any thought self-aggrandizement. These are all examples of giving as opposed to taking. I don't feel compelled to give you a whole lot of examples of taking. We're all familiar with that. But there is this dichotomy of supply and demand, give and take. And there are times when graciously taking the help of another person is itself a way of honoring the law of exchange. So we go on to the card of destiny, the chariot. And we've seen the chariot before. The chariot is a card of internal combustion. He drives around in circles. But it is a card in which the personality discovers the ability to generate energy for his own forward progress. And that's what the law of exchange does. The law of exchange allows us to tap the innate inner power of spirit. And translate that so that we're not constantly going back and forth, wasting our time lurking back and forth between comedy and tragedy. We achieve equilibrium. We achieve balance through the workings of the duality. And we liberate ourselves from the unending repetition of lessons until we learn them. We learn how to learn them. This is the card that suggests to me that if we are constantly lurching back and forth between happiness and unhappiness, that plants the seeds of conflict in personal relationships or war in national relationships. None of that is necessary. None of that is, it is based on the residue of ancient evil, but the law of exchange gives us a means by which we can harness this ancient evil and bring spirit in to redeem it. That's our work. And this is the process, the natural process of going around and around and around in never-ending circles until you learn your lesson, until your debt is satisfied. This then brings, well, let me pause here and ask for any questions before we go to the pillar of revelation. Any pillars or commentary so far? Any questions? No? All right. Well, we go on to the real question, which is the Queen of Cups. And the Queen of Cups has all this energy cascading down from the head, from the crown. And she's glowing. Her aura of helpfulness and compassion and caring is glowing. And the question then becomes, how can we enrich life in this situation? Whatever the situation is, any aspect of life, a relationship, a financial squeeze, a sense of being overwhelmed by the seeming futility of it all, whatever it is. What can we be doing right here, right now, in our life to enrich the lives of those around us, our own enjoyment of life, etc.? What can we do to enrich life? Well, in order to enrich life, we have to have our antenna up to spirit. We have to be tapping those archetypal forces of the Ten of Swords of joy and wisdom and harmony and beauty, but there isn't a single situation in your life in which you can't say, I could express more joy doing this. I could express more compassion. I could be far more patient, a lot less critical. In fact, you'll find that criticism is counterproductive. That's not to say that a critical judgment is bad, but when you start judging yourself or others critically, then you're compromising the law of judge not lest you be judged. So the answer always is, what can I give? How can I invest more of spirit into what I'm doing? So we ask, what qualities of spirit could I add to this situation to transform it from a prison to a paradise on earth? That pretty well sums it up. What elements of spirit can I learn and master and add to the situation? If you're a mother cooking dinner, can you add joy and dignity and peace to the preparation of food? It doesn't have to be any more complex than that. Can you add dignity to the way you treat your employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? What is there of spirit that I can add to this situation and enrich the value of what I am doing. Then we come to the next card, which is the card of the unseen forces, and we have the Six of Cups. We have a male and a female sniffing the flowers. There are three levels of flowers. These correspond to the three gunas of Raja Yoga, the gross, the subtle, and the sublime. The gross being, they're all expressions of beauty, but there's coarse beauty, sublime, subtle beauty, and then sublime beauty. And that corresponds to the physical, the emotional, and the mental plane, or the life of personality, the life of the soul, and the life of spirit. But it's both the male and the female in perfect harmony sniffing together. We have yoked the two sides of our duality to work in sympathetic cooperation, companionship, so that we're both sniffing the same reality. We're on the same page. We're working together. So we draw in friends and acquaintances and energies of like nature to augment our efforts. And what this is telling us is we need always to focus on the sublime. If you're focused on the sublime, then the subtle and the gross will take care of themselves. The sublime will enrich those levels. It's the trickle-down theory, only it's not trickle-down as much as it's pour-down. It overflows. It's like the Titan's cup. The love and whatever, the beauty of the sublime level at the top overflow and stimulate the subtle levels, and that overflows and stimulates the gross levels. And in that way, we enrich life on Earth. Then we come to another six. We come to the spiritual ideal and the Six of Swords, and we have our master guiding the boat across the choppy seas, one side quiet, the other side choppy. And we have those six swords stuck like a dynamo in the bottom of the boat. And he's using spiritual energy to drive a physical object across the choppy seas of the emotions. This is a card of mastery, a card of self-control. And what it contains, what this is suggesting, is the law of exchange, as we work it out and master it, gives us insight into how to access an unlimited, unending source of riches, abundance, wealth, creativity, whatever it is of spirit that we're working with, patience, time. I mean, that's the easiest one to access, is that we understand something about eternity. We don't really, but we know that it goes on and on and on, and always has. We may not be able to put our thinking caps around that entirely, but we know that we don't have to worry about today, because eternity, you know, we're good for all eternity. Consciousness survives death, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a card of mastery, spiritual mastery. And it represents the capacity of spirit to empower our sojourn here on Earth. If you just think about this and contemplate this one card and this one aspect of it, you will learn so much about the law of exchange that it's infinite. That's the point I'm trying to get across, is that this one idea that spirit empowers our sojourn on Earth. We're not down here. We haven't been thrown in the deep end and forgotten. It may feel like that from time to time, but every human being on Earth has an equal opportunity to learn to access the spiritual realms of life and use that power to guide them through life. It means they have to exhibit a certain mastery over the ancient residue of evil, the gravitational pulls of matter. Yes, we have to demonstrate a certain amount of mastery, but we're all free to do that. Nothing's stopping us except ourselves, our pride, our vanity, our sense of we ought to know how to do this automatically, etc. And as we contact the life of spirit, we are enriching life in a dramatic way. And that enrichment, once we become an enricher, not a depleter, a contributor, not a consumer, the whole definition of life changes. And that isn't to say that every lifetime is exactly the same, but we can more or less, as we grow closer and closer to the spirit, we can more or less assume that we will enjoy good health, we will enjoy good education, we will enjoy all the opportunities and advantages that we have earned. Then we come to the final card, the Two of Pentacles. The two pentacles are the inner and the outer dimensions of life. The agent here, a young woman, the intuitive nature of our being, is the front person with the ocean of life behind. And so this is not only duality, but it's infinity. You see, the duality is linked by the symbol of infinity, but in addition to that, the ocean of life, which is infinite, is at her back. The ocean of life, God's providence, is saying, I got your back. Right there in that card. And so she has learned not to be distracted by the duality, but to yoke them together through the practice of yoga. She's Yoko from Yokohama, I guess. But anyway, she's learned to individualize the abundance of life, the richness of life. I was telling Rose over the weekend that I've come up with a title for a book, which I may or may not write, called Life is a Feast. Here are some recipes. This is my point, is that life is a smorgasbord, a feast. It's a banquet. There's all kinds of rich wonders and delights to be tasted and whatnot. We have to learn how to get into the banquet hall. That's the life of spirit. And so what we do, what the Two of Pentacles represents here is access to cosmic levels. Through the law of exchange and working out this harnessing of duality, we understand, to go back to those nesting triangles in temperance, the throat of temperance, we understand that our needs are within a larger life, within a large life. We are a life within a larger life, within a larger life, within a larger life. We are a life within humanity, which is a life with, or we're a life within our nation, which is a life within humanity, which is a life within the body of Christ, which is a life within God, which is a life within the solar system, which is a life within the cosmos. And through this mastery of the law of exchange, we can actually access an ever-increasing span or domain of richness, of abundance, of wisdom, of light, of joy, of harmony, of all these different qualities. Because our joy exists within the larger joy of an inner group, the joy of the soul, the joy of spirit, the monad, which is actually bliss, which is the joy of God, which is within the joy of the cosmos. And we talk about it in terms of forces of the zodiac, but we actually are, because of our consciousness, we can learn to focus our awareness so that we work with this law of exchange, and we can access higher principles, the laws of life, and make them work for us. We are designed to do this. This fulfills our purpose. The triangle, or not the triangle, the sign of infinity here can be thought of as a Möbius strip. And the Möbius strip has two sides, and all on one side. If you are familiar with this from geometry, it flows back into itself. So there's only one side to a medium strip. It's not the inside and the outside. The inside becomes the outside. The outside becomes the inside. This is a perfect symbol. We use it in our essay on the spiritual path as a symbol. But this is the perfect symbol of the law of exchange, is that the inside and the outside of the Möbius strip are identical. In other words, the abstract nature of the life of spirit is the same as the finite nature of life on earth. And in our consciousness, we blend those two and we discover that secret. And so even though we are find ourselves in a physical body here on earth, we are not trapped by that physical body because we have learned the law of exchange to find our sources and our roots in the forces of the zodiac, in the archetypal dimensions of life, etc., etc., etc. So we bring all this down into our little focus point, and we utilize the law of exchange to do this. Let me emphasize, the law of exchange is not the literal treatment of duality, the eye for the eye bit. It is not a quid pro quo. I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. That's entirely, quid pro quo is entirely a illusion of the physical plane. It's taking materialism at face value and saying, well, I'll get as much as I can. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about tapping the rich, inner, hidden potential in anything material by accessing the law, life of spirit, and using the law of exchange to transfer the joy, the wisdom, the harmony, the beauty, whatever, of the life of spirit, so that it appears in our work, in our relationships, in our self-image, in everything we do, every facet of life, which, of course, is very consistent with our theme of the ongoing class of the life of discipleship. Okay, I'm going to stop here and entertain comments and questions. Any comments or questions about the law of exchange? This is the period of time when you exchange your questions for my answers.
Is it unmuted?
No. Anybody?
I don't know if
you're
Carl.
Could you mention here?
Okay, Betty, hold a second. Somebody started talking first.
It's me.
Mimi?
Yeah, I don't know if this will make sense, but it was just a thought that I had that in anything you do in life, then you really choose your own payment for anything. And I'm saying payment in the best sense of the word.
Sure.
I'm just thinking that you choose what you're going to reap.
Yeah.
And what you're going to get paid. So if you reach for the highest, if you reach for spirit, you're in essence, you know, this sounds so simple the way I'm putting it, but really you choose that exchange.
Absolutely.
Why would you not choose the best any situation?
Well, the answer would have to be ignorance, but every human decision is basically to give or to take. And there is an alternative, and that is to enrich, which ultimately becomes giving, but it can often also involve taking, because the moment you give and you build up a bank account in some future lifetime, you will receive, you see? And so give and take are basically the same thing. As you share with others, life shares with you. Simple as that. It's a dynamic principle. Okay, Betty.
I was thinking the concept of giving money to a panhandler, or on a larger scale, the government giving money to the so-called poor. which in effect keeps them poor and kills their initiative.
Right.
In that sense, you know, if we're giving money to a panhandler to relieve our guilt, or, you know, saying, well, the government can take care of the poor, and that way I don't have to feel guilty and I don't have to feel responsible, it's not an effective use of this law.
Well, that's absolutely true, but in addition to that, the basic assumption that we have any duty to take care of the poor is a false assumption. We should encourage the poor. We should share with the poor. But again, it's the adage of your investment will be far, far more powerful if you teach the poor how to become unpoor, how to provide for themselves. If you teach them self-reliance, your reward will be far greater than if you just give them a meal. The meal might come in handy from time to time, and I'm not ruling that out. But the key here lies with the Ace of Swords of planting, sowing the seeds, so that it's not a one-off occurrence and then they're back to poverty again. And obviously, the whole concept that government should be involved in redistributing the wealth or caring for the poor is a distortion of the purpose of government. The work of charity is much better left to churches. They've got enough problems themselves, but at least they are better prepared to distribute charity than the government. The government has absolutely zero qualifications for doing any of this, and so it's just a facade, an illusion. It's to make everybody feel like they're doing something good, and they're not. So the key here is that every choice we make, we either enrich life or we deplete it. If we deplete it or make or imprison a whole class of people through our incredible stupidity, then that will bring in limiting situations in the future. Anybody else?
How about paying forward?
Paying forward.
What is that?
That sounds like a subscription program. Paying forward is a nice enough idea. I'm not too worried about paying forward. Let's enrich in the present. And we should be focused on what we're doing now rather than saying, okay, obviously, if we see a five-year-old with a great deal of, say, musical skill, mm-hmm. and we have the wherewithal to, this is a poor child, can't even afford a piano, but we have the wherewithal to send them to music lessons, mm-hmm. and we do, that's a form of paying forward. We're educating him on the basis so that when he's an adult, he can use his talent and skill.
Well, I mean, would someone starting a business...
That's an investment.
Anybody taking a risk?
Yeah, taking a risk, investing, that's planting the seeds. That, if that's what you mean by paying forward, that's, of course, good. Mm-hmm. But the paying forward is kind of based on the opposite of paying off your debts. So that's the whole concept behind it. Well, I would prefer to take the whole argument out of the concept of debt and assets and recognize that we have no debt to spirit. We may have a debt to life, to physical life. I might have a debt to you, you may have a debt to me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't have a debt to God, so to speak. We're all here to do God's work, and we're trying our best to do this. And so all this comes down to how much are we under the illusory pull of matter, and how much have we liberated ourselves from that and can see clearly that our work here is to make an investment in life. And I think that lets you understand this pretty effectively. Anybody else? Well, I think I'm just about done. So We'll do this again in a couple of weeks. I hope this has been helpful to you and enjoyable. I'm looking forward to a big reward. I couldn't resist that. I mean, some temptations are just standing there waiting. All righty. Talk to you. We'll do this again. Thank you and good night.
Good night.